Welcome to the podcast service of Sydney's Heart 1032, available on the web at heart1032.com.au.
Could filmmakers, perhaps without even realising it, capture something of God and his ways in their movies? That's what film critic Jeffrey Overstreet believes. Indeed, he believes that what sets apart timeless films from merely popular ones is just that. They've actually captured something of God in them. Jeffrey's written a book called Through a Screen Darkly, looking at beauty, truth and evil in movies. And he's joined us now for a chat. Jeffrey, welcome to Open House.
Thank you. It's a privilege.
You're a film critic who is also a Christian. And as many of us know, the dominant posture of many Christians towards the cinemas has been, at the very least, suspicion, I guess, because of the immorality that's often portrayed in the typical Hollywood film. Have you always been a lover or a consumer of film?
Well, no. Growing up, I was in a community that looked very suspiciously at film. I grew up in a conservative Baptist community in Portland, Oregon, in the Pacific Northwest, and I haven't strayed far from there. I live in Seattle now. Mm-hmm. But the people in my church looked very suspiciously at movies and at people who went to them. And I remember that their suspicion threw fuel on the fires of my youthful curiosity, so to speak. So I would spend a lot of time looking at the advertisements for new movies in the newspaper and reading the reviews to try and understand, well, what is in these movies that makes people so worried about them? Mm-hmm. But my parents, out of concern for me when I was very young, did not want me to go to the movies, and occasionally would take me to see a Walt Disney animated film like Snow White and the Seven Dwarves or Pete's Dragon, and I became fascinated with the power of cinema, with the power of imagery and music and storytelling in that fashion. And so it was not going to take long for me to start finding ways to sneak into movie theaters, and eventually my parents began to develop confidence in my developing sense of discernment, and I became more concerned about, well, how do I make good choices as opposed to bad choices? Yeah. And so that's sort of how it started for me.
Do you think we miss something by closing ourselves off to films or restricting ourselves to, like you said, the Disney films and the Pete's Dragons of the world and the PG-rated films?
Well, I think it really depends on the person. I do think that quite a few people really are missing out. But then again, I do commend parents who are very careful not to just let their children absorb whatever they want to. Storytelling in any form, art in any form, can be very dangerous if the audience is not discerning. There are a lot of films that I have shown to audiences of grown-ups that contain reflections of very volatile and ugly truths about our world. But those adults have been discerning enough to be able to discuss those scenes and say, well, sure, the movie was showing evil, but it was not recommending evil. It was portraying evil the way all good art can in order to get us to think about choices and consequences. And where does evil come from? Why do we engage in it? What happens when we do? What can we do about the damage that evil does? However, if you show those same movies to children who have not been taught yet to think through those questions, they will be either overwhelmed by, frightened by, or tempted by what they see there, and it will be more difficult for them to process. That's why I'm very alarmed that most movies and entertainment that is prepared for teenagers is so heavy on content that glorifies reckless sexuality. But a lot of my favorite movies deal with sexuality in a very mature way, in context that allows us to think about right and wrong as adults.
I guess the key word that you mentioned there was discernment, isn't it? Actually being, I guess, active viewers of film, not just passive receivers, passive consumers of it.
Well, that's right. And the Bible constantly exhorts us to dwell on whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is of good repute. That's what the book of Philippians says. When I was young, I was told again and again to pay attention to Ephesians 5:11, which said, have nothing to do with the unfruitful deeds of darkness. Mm. And people would tell me that and say, see, you're not supposed to have anything to do with darkness, so don't go to the movies. What they didn't tell me was that there was more to that verse. The verse actually says, have nothing to do with the unfruitful deeds of darkness. Instead, expose them. That, to me, sounds like the calling of an artist, or a surgeon, perhaps. If we are going to deal with evil in our daily lives, sure, we don't want to have anything to do with it, but we do have to acknowledge it. We do have to examine, study, and understand it so we know how to avoid it. Because, to be honest, none of us can go out into our daily lives without wrestling with evil in some form. And so I think it's the work of the artist to help us think through right and wrong, to look at it and consider it the way a doctor might look at and consider and perform surgery on a disease.
Well, we're talking to Jeffrey Overstreet. He's a film critic tonight on Open House. He's written this book called Through a Screen Darkly. We're exploring how maybe some aspects of God and his nature and his ways maybe have been captured in film. I guess that begs the question, Jeffrey, what really is the purpose of art? Really, what does great art, including great film, seek to do?
Well, it must be important because everyone flocks to art on the weekend and in the evenings, whether it's just turning on the television or reading a good book or sitting back and listening to Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart or going out to a Woody Allen movie. I think, you know, art in all of its forms is always drawing our attention. And I think, from my own experience, that what art is doing is it's helping us understand the world around us. The world around us is so busy and so vast that sometimes we need to put a frame around a piece of it and look at it very closely in order to understand it. What artists do is they hold up a mirror, if you will, and reflect back to us a piece of life. And they say, look into this picture. Look into this this mystery and see what you can discern. Now, a lot of people use art to preach or to teach lessons or to make a point. And that can be useful. But great art does much more than that. You couldn't boil down Shakespeare's Hamlet to one simple lesson. And Jesus resisted boiling his own parables down to the moral of the story is. No, he liked to say, those who have ears to hear, let them hear. And I think all of the great artists, whether they know it or not, are trying to get to the truth of the matter. They're trying to reflect something they have experienced or something they're wondering about, and they're inviting us into that experience to come to our own conclusions about what they are representing. And so that's what I think art is for.
How do you think that God speaks through films today, if he does at all?
Well, C.S. Lewis once wrote about how artists are not really creators. We're more organizers. We arrange elements that God has already made. When we tell a story, we're not really creating new material so much as we are borrowing from the things that God has made and arranging them in a certain way so that we can try and make some sense. Sure, there's imagination involved, but we can't invent colors that we haven't seen before or that haven't already been made by God, if you know what I mean. We can sort of take things apart and put them together again as a way of trying to understand. So I think that artists, no matter who they are, no matter what they believe, are basically rearranging things that God has made. And as a result, those things continue to convey, to some extent, the truth and the meaning that God put in those things. However, we are all messed up, believers and unbelievers alike. And as a result, when we make something, it is flawed. No matter how great a masterpiece it is, it will also contain elements of our own confusion or our own arrogance or our own deception. And so that's why even art that is labeled Christian art, we should approach with great care to make sure that we can tell what the work is trying to say to us and then question whether or not that is true.
So just speaking on that, I want to get to a few films that you really think have captured something of God's goodness or some of his ways in the world in just a minute. But before we leave that point of Christian art, where do you think we most often go wrong when it comes to filmmakers who are trying to get a Christian message across through a film or through some art or through a book or something like that? What do you think have been the biggest pitfalls we've fallen into?
Well, I have to be careful that I don't sound like I am criticizing teachers or preachers, because I have the utmost respect for great teachers and great preachers. They have influenced my life tremendously. But art, the pursuit of art, the making of art, that is something different. If we decide to use the tools of art just to make a point, just to hit people over the head with the gospel or just to tell people that something is wrong or something is right. I think we're really missing out on the true potential for art, because a work of art does not hit people over the head, or else we don't need the work of art. If a work of art is just the moral of the story is don't get involved in drugs, then I'm not really sure why we needed the story. I think the lesson would have been enough. The story, on the other hand, is something that allows people to continue to talk about and examine and re-examine the relationships between the elements in that story or in that film. That's why we keep going back to great films like The Godfather or Chariots of Fire or Peter Jackson's The Lord of the Rings, because we keep finding things in there that speak to us. It might be a picture. It might be a moment of natural beauty. It might be a moment when a character makes a terrible choice and suffers terrible consequences. And so I think that's what we miss out on when we turn art into propaganda or into just an object lesson or into a tool to achieve our own ends.
Mm. Well, we're talking to Jeffrey Overstreet. He is a film critic. He's also written this book called Through a Screen Darkly. We'll be podcasting this via the openhouse.net.au blog site as well. These days, when it comes to books, the way I define a really good book is by the degree to which I really want to read it again or feel that I have to read it again. Now, I want you to give me Jeffrey Overstreet's top five movies that have captured something of God, something of God's goodness, his ways, that you think deserve repeat viewing, and also tell us the major spiritual themes that you've seen through them as well. Give us your top five.
Well, it's always hard to limit it to five.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And if you asked me tomorrow, I might come up with another list entirely. But these are the five that are on my mind today. Babette's Feast is a wonderful film based on a short story by Isaac Dinesen about a woman who wins the French lottery and has an opportunity to do whatever she wants. And what she chooses to do is an act of such grace and such sacrifice and generosity that it just dazzles the community where she lives. And I love this film for the pictures of grace in it, for the way that the villagers respond to her gift, many of them responding with suspicion.
When I first saw Babette's Feast, because I heard about it, and I've got it out on DVD, and it's a 1984 or 5 or something that it was produced in Denmark, isn't it? I think it's a Danish
film.
That's
correct.
When I first started watching it, I thought, oh dear, this looks like one of those really colourless, drab midday movies. And then when I continued to watch it through to the end, the ending in particular, the aspects that you were talking about, the generosity that she gives, blew my mind. It really was a picture of God's generosity to us in forgiveness and in lavishing so many good things on us that we just really do not deserve.
And so many of the great films really do require some discipline and some patience, at least the first time through, because you're not sure where it's headed. Maybe you're irritated by having to read subtitles. Maybe it's not as flashy and engaging as The Lord of the Rings with all the special effects and the noise and the drama. But Babette's Feast is one of those that will really reward people who pay attention and move at its slow pace. Another one that is similar, I guess, in that way, is Wings of Desire, by the German filmmaker Wim Wenders. Mm-hmm. This was a film made before the wall was torn down in Berlin, and it's about angels who are descending onto Berlin and basically acting as guardian angels to the people who live there. And they are listening in on the thoughts of the people who travel back and forth in their mundane, tedious lives. Mm-hmm. And what we begin to see as we look through the eyes of the angels is that this world is still filled with wonder and beauty and amazement. And one of the angels, Damiel, played by the great Bruno Ganz, decides to take the plunge, so to speak, and become a human being because he wants to understand what it is about, for example, a cup of coffee that makes people revere that so much. And so he takes the plunge, and the movie switches from black and white to color, and we travel with him into Berlin with a whole new appreciation of the simple things that make our lives so rich. And every time I watch that film, it just inspires me and reminds me that God is waiting to meet me in almost every moment of the day. Oh. All I need is a renewed perspective.
Okay.
Very, very grateful for that one.
Yeah, Wings of Desire. Okay. Film number three?
Film number three, I'd probably have to say Chariots of Fire. Uh-huh. It's not one of the most earth-shaking epic films ever made, but it really made a difference in my life because it gave me two characters to think about. Eric Little, who was a Christian missionary going to China, but before he went to China, he ran in the Olympics. And Harold Abrahams, a man who believed very different things and struggled with very different things. And as we compare and contrast their two lives, we can learn a lot. We can especially learn from the way that Eric Little reminds us how excellence glorifies God by reflecting the standards that God himself has set. Mm. The line, I think, that rings out most profoundly in my life from any movie comes from the moment where Eric, trying to decide whether to go on the mission field or to run a race in the Olympics, goes to his father, says, "Father, what should I do?" His father says, "Son, you can glorify God by peeling a potato if you peel it to perfection." And Eric goes and he runs in the race. Now, this doesn't seem like something that a missionary should spend time doing. But by showing people something beautiful, he raises questions in their minds about the source of his inspiration. And now they come to him with questions that he can answer, rather than him going to them and hitting them over the head with whatever message he has. It reminds me of something that Madeleine L'Engle once wrote, that great storyteller of A Wrinkle in Time. She said, "We do not draw people to Christ by loudly discrediting what they believe, by telling them how wrong they are and how right we are. But we draw people to Christ by showing them a light that is so lovely that they want with all their hearts to know the source of it." Hmm. And whether it's the way Eric Little runs in Chariots of Fire, or the way that Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart composed music, or the way that Vincent van Gogh or Michelangelo, for that matter, were able to paint, those things affirm and inspire my faith in God because they tell me, you know, it's not just a simple human being doing this. There's something else going on here that's greater. That's what Chariots of Fire does for me.
We're talking to Jeffrey Overstreet, a film critic and an author, and we're exploring five great films that none of us should miss. They deserve repeat viewing because they have captured something of God's goodness and something of the beauty of this world. Okay, so we've had Babette's Feast, Wings of Desire, Chariots of Fire, number four.
Well, you know, I'm going to have to go with the kid in me and say Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Really? I wasn't expecting that.
Well, why not throw in a fun one like that, an adventure film for all ages? I got to tell you that there really is something special about Raiders when it comes to blockbuster Hollywood movies, and it's this. The hero is a complete loser. I mean, if you look at that movie again, Indiana Jones is always failing. He loses the treasure that he's after at the beginning. He loses the girl. When he finds the girl, he abandons her all tied up in a tent so he can pursue something he thinks is more important. And then he loses that. At the end of the film, the hero, so to speak, is tied to a stake while the bad guys achieve what Indiana Jones has always wanted to achieve. And then what happens? God decides what's really going on here. God decides how things should turn out. And in the end, well, evil is overcome. All that is sacred is held up as true and wonderful. And poor Indiana Jones is humbled and troubled and humiliated. And I think I relate to that on some level. You know, for all of my best efforts, for all the good things I want to try to achieve, you know, I fail all the time, mostly due to my own arrogance or my own ambition or my own confusion about what God really wants. Sure. And so, I don't know, I feel kind of a camaraderie with old Indy, and I'm glad they're making another Indiana Jones movie. I hope they don't screw it up.
Yes, I hope it doesn't go the way of so many sequels of the third and fourth generation. All right, well, your final movie, and let me guess, is it going to be Krzysztof Kieślowski's Three Colors Blue?
You are absolutely right. I was quickly making a list of runners up to encourage people to see, like Robert Bresson's O Hazard Balthazar, or a film called Ordette by Carl Dreyer that actually includes one of the same actresses that's in Babette's Feast. But those are profound works of art that require all kinds of study and contemplation. But Krzysztof Kieslowski, again, is it's a very personal connection I have with his work. I can't really explain it except to say that he has taught me that imagery can say as much as a script. And Three Colors Blue, the first in his Three Colors trilogy, stars Juliette Binoche as the wife of a great composer who is widowed. Her husband and her daughter are killed in a car accident, and she is left to decide, is she going to finish the great composition that her husband started, or is she going to run away from everything that hurts her and that reminds her of that loss? Is she going to start a whole new life and just wipe the slate clean? Mm-hmm. Well, she decides to try that second option, and she discovers that she is haunted not just by memories of the music, but by this strange, mysterious blue light that tends to flare up in moments when she least expects it. And as we watch this movie, which spends most of its time in a close-up on Juliette Binoche's face, we don't hear her say a whole lot, but we watch her make this incredible journey through emotions, through ethical dilemmas, to come to a point where she realizes that you cannot make a meaningful life by turning a blind eye to trouble. You have to get involved. If your life is going to be meaningful, you have to embrace the pain, carry your cross, so to speak, carry that burden, and make something out of it. And without saying much, Blue shows us so much, and I think that's one of the distinctives of great art. It shows, it doesn't tell. It lets the artist trusts the audience to think for themselves and come to their own conclusions.
Yeah.
And that is something that Krzysztof Kieslowski did in all of his films, and I would say most especially in Blue.
Yeah, I saw Three Colors Blue just recently, and I think, like you said before, there are some films that you need to see twice to really grasp some of the finer nuances. And that's a film that I found like that. I really liked it the second way through. Now, we should actually mention that this is rated in Australia, it's either M or MA, because of some scenes which actually aren't particularly graphic. They're just actually in the background and in a bit of a blur with relations to Juliet's flatmate, so to speak, who's actually a prostitute. And at first, when I, you know, those scenes started to come up, I thought, oh dear, okay, I don't know if I really want to see this. But along the lines of what you were saying before, it's very interesting that that prostitute in the end of the film is actually portrayed as someone who is desperately longing for something that she cannot seem to have and doesn't seem to get, and that is love.
Yes, yeah. She has run into extreme behavior as a way of avoiding the pain back home. She has run into this life as a form of sort of extreme denial, the way that some people run to drugs. And while those scenes are very disturbing, and they may mean that the film is not appropriate for certain viewers, and it definitely is not appropriate for very young viewers, it does present those evils in a context that allows us to see them as evil. If anybody was to come away from that film wanting to to spend time in a strip club or become a stripper, I would wonder how in the world they watched the same movie I did.
That's very true. Well, I have so enjoyed this chat, Jeffrey. We probably need to wrap it up, but I've so enjoyed this chat. Thanks for joining us on Open House tonight.
Well, thank you, and I encourage everybody to come over to lookingcloser.org and look me up there, and we can carry on our own conversations about film. So thank you very much.
Good stuff. That's Jeffrey Overstreet. He's a film critic, a Christian, and the author of Through a Screen Darkly, Looking at Beauty, Truth, and Evil in the Movies. It's published through Regal Books.
We hope you enjoyed this Heart 1032 podcast. To listen to more great audio, visit heart1032.com.au.